Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Long before its present usage, those who come to synagogue on Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Passover, and today, Shavuot, to recite Yisker, have well understood the meaning of the catchphrase, together, apart. Yisker, young and old, synagogue regulars alongside the more infrequent attendees, for the first time and for longer than we can remember, arriving for a moment of intentional memory, recalling our loved ones. This one remembering a brother, that one a spouse, this one a child, that one a mother or father. Some loved ones suffering a tragic death and others having been granted length of years. As a rabbi, a Yisker room has a palpable, different feeling. Everyone present shares the fact of loss, and yet every loss is unique to that person. We are together and apart, all at the same time. The fact of our physical apartness this year amplifies our Yisker feeling. We are deprived of our sanctuary. We are physically distant one from another, but we are joined together in our remembrances of our loved ones, in loss, together, apart. This morning, we read Shavuot's Book of Ruth, and I imagine together apart is exactly how Ruth and Naomi felt on their journey to Bethlehem. The backdrop we know is one of natural catastrophe, a famine resulting in geographic displacement and economic insecurity. Seeking to improve their lot, Naomi and her husband Elimelech traveled to Moab, where their sons Mahlon and Chilion marry two local Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah, respectively. But by the fourth book, verse of the book, Elimelech had passed. By the next verse, so too Naomi's two sons. Returning home, Naomi is bereft of everything, save for her foreign-born daughter-in-law. "Do not call me Naomi," meaning pleasant, she tells her kinsman. "Call me Mara," meaning bitter. "I went away full and have returned empty." Naomi's loss is incalculable. Her husband, her sons, a heartache beyond measure, a heartache all her own. But Naomi wasn't the only one suffering loss on that journey back to Bethlehem. Ruth was widowed as well, the love of her life, Mahlon, taken before his time. One could, I suppose, say that at least Ruth didn't lose a child, and she, unlike Naomi, had Ruth on her side. She could, I suppose, begin again. And yet, to a certain degree, Ruth's sense of loss could be arguably exceeding that of Naomi. Naomi, after all, could return home to her people. Ruth, however, having married into an Israelite household, had presumably severed her ties to her Moabite tribe. Ruth's decision to bind her destiny to Naomi and the God of Israel make her the gold standard for all future converts. But lest we forget, it also served a practical purpose. Ruth had nowhere else to go. Ruth and Naomi were two widows journeying together to Bethlehem. They were together, apart, their sorrows particular to each of them. And it wasn't just Ruth and Naomi. There was a third widow or widower of our story, Boaz. The Talmud explains that Boaz had also suffered the loss of his beloved, going so far as to suggest that it was on the very day that Ruth and Naomi returned that Boaz himself had just buried his wife. Boaz may have been blessed with material comfort, But aging and heirless, his legacy was altogether uncertain. Were there to have been a shul in Bethlehem and a Yisker service, I have no doubt that sitting there in the pews would be Naomi, Ruth, Boaz, and so many others, together and apart, tears flowing freely, each recalling their respective loved ones, each one feeling uncertain about their present and their future. The redemptive arc of the story of Ruth is not a linear one. Neither Ruth, nor Naomi, nor Boaz regain their fullness all at once. The comfort each of them seek comes by way of individual acts of goodness, kindness, and compassion, retrieved like the barley harvest, one sheaf at a time. The first and perhaps most famous act of chesed is the aforementioned kindness of Ruth to Naomi. Your people will be my people. Where you go, I will go. Ruth understood that however she may have differed from her mother-in-law in age and origin and otherwise, as two widowed women, the two of them shared far more. And at that moment, Ruth looked beyond her own loss to comfort Naomi, her mother-in-law. Ruth's act of kindness, of chesed, we know would be repaid that fateful day once back in Israel when she went out to glean in the field of Boaz. Boaz is impressed with Ruth and of what he had heard of Ruth's kindness to Naomi. Boaz offers Ruth both blessing and protection as she gleans from his field. There was no advantage to be gained by Boaz. It was a simple act of kindness and a mirror into Boaz's soul. No matter the inner grief that Boaz himself had experienced, he didn't lose his ability to look outward and offer a helping hand to this young foreign woman. The combination of Ruth's industriousness and Boaz's responsiveness prompts Naomi to set aside her all-consuming and self-declared bitterness and consider something that people in pain usually don't see, a future. Naomi devises a plan to find a home for Ruth, not a simple task to begin with, in that it involves finding a mate for her dead son's widow, a task undoubtedly laden with all sorts of emotions. And yet she does exactly that. Like Boaz to Ruth, like Ruth to Naomi, Naomi transcends the membrane of her own sorrow in order to perform a grand act of kindness towards another. And then on that fateful night on the threshing floor, Ruth courageously presses beyond her comfort zone, reciprocating kindness back to Boaz. Blessed be the Lord, Boaz tells Ruth. Your latest deed of kindness is greater than the first, and that you have not turned to younger men, whether rich or poor. Boaz knows full well that Ruth has options, and presumably Ruth knows that too. But Boaz is a kinsman of Naomi, and by extension, of Ruth's late husband. And as I learned from Rabbi Eli Kaunfer this past week, in the Middle Ages, when a widow married a widower, the traditional seven blessings mentioned Adam and Eve under the chuppah were substituted with an alternative blessing referencing Ruth and Boaz. The love of Ruth and Boaz represents the possibility of a love emerging following loss. The love of Ruth and Boaz signals what happens when two people recognize that despite their loss, a person can always retrieve an act of kindness and help lessen the loss of another. Ruth to Naomi, Naomi to Ruth, Ruth to Boaz, and the community bearing witness to it all. Kindness begetting kindness, goodness generating further goodness. The power of Ruth is that a virtual cycle is created whereby the emptiness of each character is filled by way of good deeds extended to the other. Lest we forget, the very name Ruth derives from its Hebrew etymology, meaning to fill, as a cantor just chanted in the 23rd Psalm, my cup overflows, kosi revaya. Ruth, both the person and the book, are teaching us that aching as our emptiness may be, it can be filled. No matter how empty we are, we can and perhaps must fill each other's emptiness. We can fill each other up. Let this be our charge this year, in this Yisker hour. In this holiday of first fruits, the baskets of our harvest are filled with a bounty of memory. We recall the kindnesses of those who came before, their compassion, their wisdom, their sacrifice, and most of all, their love. We reflect on their lives, and we are grateful, and we are also filled with sadness at their loss, a fullness and an emptiness at one and the same time. It's important to be present in our sorrow. To fail to do so would not only ignore the humanity of the person whom we mourn at this moment, but our own humanity as well. And yet, we know, as learned from Ruth, that we can also assign meaning to the lives of our loved ones and our own by filling our days with acts of chesed, with acts of kindness. No matter the depths of our sorrow, none of us are empty-handed. We can give of the fruits of our own good deeds freely, selflessly, and compassionately. No different than a person, no matter their financial straits, is obligated, according to Jewish law, to still give tzedakah. So too a person, no matter their grief, they shouldn't abstain from the opportunity and the obligation to ease the grief of another person in pain. Together, apart, this is who we are, this year, this Shavuot, this Yisker, but really always. Such is the limitation of being human, our joys, our sorrows, our lives understood by us and us alone. The holes left by the loss of our loved ones have set us apart only further. Our emptiness felt deeply. We cannot just wish it away. So let us respond as did Ruth, as did Naomi, as did Boaz, as did our loved ones before us. Those whom we recall today, they too knew loss, and yet they nevertheless filled our lives with love, with acts of chesed one to the other, to the other. Let us fill our baskets, each other's baskets, from futility to fulfillment, from emptiness to overflow, the tears that are sown today to be reaped, please God, one day with joy.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, the place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.
Hallelujah.